to get a promotion. So they were set up to take this test, the sailor test. And the captain starts to speak to them. He says, "Tell me, sailor, what would you do if you're on the ship and a storm comes from the south?" He says, "Storm from the south, I'm going to take an anchor and throw it in." "Okay, very good. And what happens if a storm is coming from the north?" "I'm going to take an anchor and throw it into the ocean." "And what happens if a storm is coming from the west?" "I'm going to take an anchor and throw it in." "And what happens if another storm is coming from the west?" "I'm going to take another anchor and throw it in." "And if another storm is coming from the east, what are you going to do?" "I'm going to take an anchor and throw it in." Finally, the captain looks and says, "Sailor, where are you getting all these anchors from?" He says, "Captain, the same place you're getting all these storms from." And really, that's what life is. In life, we're constantly getting storms thrown at us. We have to understand with every storm that is thrown at us, because Baruch Hu gives together with it an anchor. Sometimes we don't see the anchor right away. But if Torah is our anchor, then it's very simple in a way that any storm that we are presented with, to be able to know how to deal with it. Because everything is in the Torah. And that is what anchors us. And every challenge that comes with us is a Torah that guides us. You know, in this parasha, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and he sends the wagons down to his father, as the Gemara explains to us, what happens to wagons? To tell him, to remind the sugya we were learning before we left Egla Rufa. So Rav Tam and many asked, said, of all things Yosef had to send to his father, he was away for more than 20 years, why didn't he send something that's an intimate piece of information between the two of them, a nice story that they had together? Yosef, he sends this to prove that he's Yosef. So Rav Palm explains, he's not looking just to prove who he was. He's looking to prove that he's the same person he was when he left his father. Not just that he's Yosef, but if you meet somebody and you speak in learning, it means you're holding a learning. You meet somebody and he asks you about the game you went to. So that's what he's holding in. He wanted to show his father who he is. Not just that I'm Yosef, but I'm the same Yosef when I left. And I remember the learning that we were doing, so we were speaking and learning. And that is what he wanted to convey to his father, that I am still that person who's holding and learning. There's a person named Moshe Shimon Krauss. Moshe Shimon Krauss, he's known as Moshele Dezinger. Moshele Dezinger came from a town, Ungvar, which is the same town my father was from. They grew up together, this person. Unfortunately, the war came, and he ended up in Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. But before that, as he was growing up, he had a golden voice. He had a beautiful voice, and he would daven the shuls. In fact, his step-grandfather was Rav Shaila Kirastir. And he met him only one time. He was young, he was under 2 years old, he was holding him, and he said, "Erhat zisepeh." It's a sweet mouth. So people used to go to this little kid when he was 4, 5, 6 years old, asking for a bracha, because the Shaila seer said he had a zisepeh. He always said about himself, "Of course, what my grandfather meant, I have a good voice. Not that I can give brachas." And he would go singing in different places in shuls. In the early 1940s, he said, while the Nazis were moving across Europe, he was invited to Chust, to daven. To daven, to give a concert, even though it was 1941. But he was invited to Chust, and there things weren't happening like they were happening in the rest of the places. So he was there, and he finished. And right afterwards, someone comes running over to him. He says, "The Rosh Kul, the president of the community, wants to speak to you." "The Rosh Kul wants to speak to me? I'm not even from Chust. He wants to speak to you." So I came inside, and it was Shabbos. He finished davening. It was in the morning. It was Shabbos. He comes inside, and he says, "You know," he says, "Rav Baruch Hu is here." Now, Rav Moshe Dezinger, as a bachur, used to go to the Milchus Elazar. He was very close with the Munkacher, the Milchus Elazar. He was nifter in 1937. He became close to the Munkacher Elazar's son-in-law, Rav Baruch Hu Rabinowitz. So the Rosh Kul tells him, he says, "I want you to know that Rav Baruch Hu is here on the train. They gathered up all the people from here, all the Polish nationals, and they're sending them to the concentration camp. They're sending them to Kamenets-Podolsk. He's on the train now, together with his son, who's grounded today, the Hantige Munkacher." So he says, what should I do? What do you want from me? So he says, here is a chok. He says, a chumash, a chok. He says, in the front, we just put in $500 in the front, and we bound in $500 in the back. I want you to take it and run to the train station and give it to him. Tell him there's $1,000. Maybe he'll help him a little. Okay, I was very scared to go. The train, they're gathering up all the people. Who knows what they would do to me? I wasn't the Polish national. Okay, so I went there. It's a long train. I'm running to each car. I'm yelling out for the Rebbe. There's no answer. I'm running and running. Finally get to the last car. The Rebbe sticks his head out of the window and he sees me. He says, Maisha, what are you doing here? He says, here, I brought you this chok. And he tells him there's $1,000 inside. It was Shabbos. He took the money. He took the chok. And then Rav Meishel looks at him and says, Rebbe, Pavuz dafter Rebbein Shalom azoi fil Kiddush Hashem. Why does Rebbein Shalom want so much Kiddush Hashem? At that time already, they didn't even know exactly what was happening, but they knew it was terrible. People were being killed and tortured. Pavuz vil Rebbein Shalom azoi fil Kiddush Hashem. So the Rebbe looks at him and says, you're talking about the people Nebuch who are getting tortured and killed. That's not Kiddush Hashem. So it's not Kiddush Hashem. So it's not Kiddush Hashem. So he's in a Kiddushim. Oh, but it's in this Kiddush Hashem. So he's looking at him. What do you mean it's not Kiddush Hashem? He says, Maishallah, Kiddush Hashem is when a person has a choice. They have no choice. They're getting killed. Avada Kiddushim. But not a Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem is when you have a choice. Maishallah wants you to know this war is going to be over. One day this war will be over. And when the day comes that the war is over, the people who survive, they're going to have choices to make. Are they going to keep Shabbos? Or are they not going to keep Shabbos? Are they going to keep kashrus? They won't keep kashrus. Are they going to marry a frum lady, a Jewish lady, or they won't? Will they bring other kids, or taras to kaddish, or not? That is going to be Kiddush Hashem. That's going to be when they have a decision to make. And unless you remember this, and talk after the war, he wavered this way and that, when you remember these words, and you remain the frum yid. And the truth is, that's the same thing in everyone's life. And our daily life. You come home from work, you're tired, I want to go out and learn, I don't want to go out and learn. It's a decision you have to make. If a person makes the right decision, it's a Kiddush Hashem. Not everyone has to know everyone's struggles, but it's more comfortable to stay home. More comfortable to do other things. And a person has that ability to make that decision. If you stay home, no one's going to scream at you, no one's going to yell at you. And yet a person comes out to go learn, it's a Kiddush Hashem. That's when a person makes a Kiddush Hashem, when he has that option of making a decision. You know, in Slobodka, there was an Elter Bacher, he was 25, 26 years old. He was a big masmid. And unfortunately, he reached a point once where his mind started to become addled. He started to lose his mind. The Roshiva saw this, he realized he has to take care of it. He tried to speak to the Bacher, but it really was getting a serious situation. So he put money together. He called in another Bacher, an 18-year-old Bacher, and he said, look, I arranged for a psychiatrist in the big city to see this Bacher. Here's this money, I want you to travel with him to the next city, and I want you to take him to the psychiatrist. Okay. Roshiva said, so he went. They're traveling together with the two Bacher, they're schmoozing with each other, they come to the city. And they come to the psychiatrist's office. There's a waiting room. They're sitting in the waiting room. They're talking. And after about a half hour, the psychiatrist opens the door and says, okay, who's next? The 26-year-old Bacher and the 18-year-old Bacher, they get up and they walk inside. They come inside. They sit down. The psychiatrist sits down. He says, no, how can I help you? And before the 18-year-old Bacher can say anything, the 25-year-old Bacher says, doctor, I'm here to help my friend. My friend needs to speak to you. He's got big problems. And the 18-year-old Bacher looks at him and says, doctor, I'm here to help my friend. You need to speak to him. He needs some help. So the older Bacher looks at the doctor and says, see, doctor, this guy has a problem. He walks around thinking he's helping everybody. And he's taking care of things. And he's bringing people to psychiatrists. You really need to help him. And the 18-year-old Bacher looks at the psychiatrist and says, doctor, what he's saying is true, but it's on him. He really needs help. So the doctor's looking at both of these guys. Doesn't know what to... And he says, you know what? This is a very, very expensive visit. Tell me, who's paying for this visit? And the 18-year-old Bacher takes out his pocket, the money from his pocket. He goes, I have the money. So I know now who's the one, who's the real patient. They told the story to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, oh, he got this from the Gemara in Kedushin on the Samach Dalron days. What's the Gemara in Kedushin, Samach Dalron days? He said, three people showed up to a town. Two men and a lady. And a bag of money, they showed up to town. But they had a big argument. One guy said, this person is my slave. This lady is my wife. And this bag of money is my money. And they were fighting, and they went to Beis Din, and he said, my slave, my wife, my money. So Beis Din turns to the other person and says, what do you have to say? He says, he's lying. He's my slave. That lady is my wife, and this money is my money. So they turn to the lady, and what do you have to say? So what I have to say? They're both my slaves, and this is my money. So Chaim Kanievsky said, the Gemara goes through the case. So Chaim Kanievsky said, look at this bacher from Slobodka. He was such a masmid. The Torah went into him. Whatever happened to his brain, happened to his brain. But you see, someone who lives in Lernen, someone who's living in Lernen, he was in a very tough situation. He was embarrassed that he was by a psychiatrist. That much he knew. And when he needed help, the first thing he reached for was, he reached for his Gemara. And he came up and he shtelzu did his sugya. He said, that's not me, it's him. And he was able to do that. And Chaim said, you see from here how much Torah goes into a person. And without you realizing it, how much you use and you live such a life of Torah. And even when he was losing his mind, unfortunately, he still kept the thinking of the Torah. You know, it says in the beginning of Bechakaisa, in Bechakaisa Teleichu, if you're going to go with my chukim, this mitzvayse tishmeru, vasisa maisa. So Rashi says, what does it mean in Bechakaisa Teleichu? You're going to go with my chukim. So Rashi says, yachol zekima mitzvahs. Maybe means that you're going to keep all the mitzvahs. He says, it can't be. Why not? Because right afterwards it says, vasisa mitzvayse tishmeru. So it can't mean that. So what does it mean? He says, "How many mekayim in bechayis teleichu? She do amelim b'teira. You're going to be an amul b'teira. You're going to work hard in the learning, and that's when you're going to get these brachas. What are the brachas you're going to get if you're attacking amul and teira? So the pasuk goes through different things. There's going to be peace, and there won't be wild animals. And you'll have food. You'll have plenty of bread. V'chaltem hachem l'sayva v'yishavtem l'vetach b'artzachem. Then the pasuk says there won't be wars, and it says v'ratfum Ufanisi aleichem, I will turn to you. V'efreisi eschem, and I will make you fruitful. V'erbeisi eschem, I will increase you. V'kimaisis brisi etchem. So Rashi says, what does it mean, Ufanisi aleichem, I will turn to you? The pasuk could just say, V'efreisi eschem, I'm going to make you fruitful. V'erbeisi eschem, and I will increase you. What is being added by Ufanisi aleichem, I will turn to you? So Rashi says, oh, good kasha, Rashi says, I'll take care of that. Ef the mikolo sokai. I'm going to turn away from all my things that I'm involved with, l'shalim scharchem, to pay your reward. I'm going to turn away from everything, and I'm going to pay your reward. What does that mean? I have to turn away from other things. So Rashi says, okay, I'll explain it. Mashal ma davar daima, l'melech shesachar poilem v'chulu. He says there's a case of someone who has a bunch of workers, and they finish working, it comes time to pay them. So he starts, they're all lining up, and he's paying all of them. One of the workers come and he tells this worker, listen here, you're my main worker. You did a tremendous job. Why don't you wait on the side? Let me take care of everybody else, all the regular stuff, and then I'll deal with you because I have a lot more to give you. He says, that's what Hashem is doing. All the nations of the world, they want their schar. So Hashem says, Ufanisi aleichem, I'm going to turn to you, you're who's learning, and I'm going to give you schar. I don't see how this answers the question. What does it mean, Ufanisi aleichem, I'll turn to you, and I will turn away from all my other things that I'm involved with. You know, conjures up the image of a very busy CEO. He's sitting in his office, the phones are ringing, secretary comes inside, sign this, sign that. The plant manager comes inside, says, we got a problem, the machine's not working. The other guy says that the truck's waiting for delivery. The other guy says that the cartons are sitting offshore, not coming from China, the containers, what are we going to do? And everyone's talking to him. And finally he says, it's enough, everyone be quiet. Let me deal with one thing at a time. Is that what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing? Ufanisi lechem, I will turn to you. And Rashi says, Efna mikol asokai, l'shalom scharchem. I have to turn away from everyone else so I can focus on you. That's not our understanding of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So you say, the Vilna Gaon, in his earlier years, he used to give a shiur in the shul. At one time, they were getting ready for the shiur. And people were coming in. And all of a sudden, one bacher comes inside. And the Vilna Gaon stood up for him. So everybody stood up for him. This bacher all of a sudden, you know, turns bright red. Everyone's standing up for him. The Vilna Gaon standing up for him. Like, he runs to his seat. He sits down. All right, shear's over. And everyone's looking at this guy like, you know, what happened? He's like, I don't know. So what do you don't know? The Vilna Gaon stood up for you. He said, I don't know. He says, you know what? I'm so curious myself. He worked up the courage. He went over to the Vilna Gaon. He says, Rebbe, I noticed the Rebbe stood up for me. He says, why did you stand up for me? Be careful when you ask the question, because sometimes you get an answer. And the Vilna Gaon looks at him, and he asked him a question that no Talmud wants to hear from his Rebbe, and that is, where were you last night? So Baruch Shem, the guy had a good answer. He goes, I was at home. He says, what were you doing at home? At night, I went to sleep. He says, you were sleeping the whole night? So actually, I didn't actually sleep the whole night. I got up at 3 o'clock. I couldn't sleep, so I got up at 3 o'clock. And what did you do? I tried to go back to sleep. And what happened? I couldn't go back to sleep. So what did you do? I took out a gemara. I started to learn. After 20 minutes, it worked. I fell asleep. So the only guy looks at him and says, I want you to know, during those 20 minutes that you were learning, there were 3 minutes that you were the only person in the world who was learning Torah. You were the only person in the universe learning Torah. Which means the whole world was standing in your schus during those 3 minutes. So somebody comes inside this year who's keeping the whole world going. I shouldn't stand up for him. That's why I stood up for you. That's what the story they told him. We know that the Chaim Volozhiner in Nefesh HaChaim writes, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu create the world with different time zones? So there should always be people learning Torah. Right, this took place when there were very few Yidden in America. And also very few Yidden in Eretz Yisrael. So 3 minutes, he was the only person in the world learning. So with this, you can understand the pasuk. He said, if you're going to go learn Torah, and you're going to be a Yigi in learning, I will turn to you. What does it mean? I'll turn to you. After Mikola Sokai, Lashamat Karacham, I'm going to look at you as if you are the only person learning Torah. And you can be sitting in a base medrash with 2,000 people. But the way Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at you is as if you are the only person in the world learning Torah. And imagine you're sitting, a guy told me once, you're sitting in a yeshiva learning, and it seems like the two guys next to him got a little bored. So they start to talk about their phones. This guy said, I got this type of phone, I got a Galaxy, what'd you get? I got a flip phone, but it has a game on it. Oh yeah, what game does it have in it? It's got Snake. It's a stupid game. But I'm getting good at it. And that's what they're talking about. He says, can you imagine if you knew that the whole world was riding on your learning? You wouldn't stop for a second. We see from this pasuk that Taka, when we learn, if we're really learning, we're learning with Yigia, then the whole world is riding on our learning. There could be another 2,000 people learning. There could be another 20,000 people learning. But if we are learning, Akash Baruch looks at it as if we are the only people in the world learning. And that's where the Gaon stood up for him. And that is how precious our learning is. We have to realize ourselves, sometimes we're learning, and like, and if they don't come, who's going to know the difference? Akash Baruch will know the difference. The world itself will feel the difference. Each person himself, when he learns, holds up the world. But it has to be learning, the Imam is leading in the learning. It tells Rosh Shiva of Gifter, unfortunately, he had to go around collecting. Rav Gifter would often say, he said, who wants to be Rosh Shiva? Rosh Shiva has to run around collecting all the time. A businessman, he gets to learn. So Rav Gifter used to go to Mexico to collect. There were the Tamidim of the Yeshiva alumni in Mexico. And Rav Gifter came, they set up a whole bunch of meetings for Rav Gifter. And when he was there, one of the people they set up, there was a very wealthy person, and they set up a meeting for him to meet Rav Gifter. And every time the meeting was supposed to happen, the person pushed off the meeting, it wasn't working out. Finally, Rav Gifter himself went to the house. He went to the person's house, he knocks on the door, and a butler answers the door. Come in. Sorry, the person's not home. He meets with the person's wife. He says, I'm sorry, my husband's in business. So Rav Gifter says, he looks around the house, a beautiful palatial home. He says, you know, I'm trying to get in touch with him for a while. I'm leaving soon. I can't get in touch with him. So she says, you know what? Let me arrange an appointment for you. Wait here. She comes back a few minutes later. I spoke to him. He said, you can go see him tomorrow morning at 7:15 in his office. 7:15 in the morning. So the Talmud goes, he drives Rav Gifter the next morning to his office, 7:15. He comes inside his beautiful, beautiful office. And he meets with the fellow, and Rav Gifter tells him about the yeshiva. And the person writes Rav Gifter a large, nice check. Once Rav Gifter has the check, he turns to the person and he says, "You know, I had a difficult time getting in touch with you." He says, "Yeah, what can I do? I got to work." He says, "You know, I was by your house. You have a beautiful home. Why do you need such a nice home if you're never there?" He looks at me and says, "Rabbi," he says, "you do what you have to do. I do what I have to do. In order for me to be successful, midav ligin in the asik. You have to live in the business. Midav ligin in the asik." He says, "So I'm here. I got to make a living. That's why I'm here." The gifter came back and he was very, very excited. And he said over the smaisa, he said the check was very nice. He said, but the lesson he learned is a lot stronger. And that is, we say the whole time in davening, for Birchas HaTorah, La'asek B'Divrei Torah. Why do we use the lashon of La'asek B'Divrei Torah? Not Lilmaid, not to learn Torah, but La'asek B'Divrei Torah. We have to be Isaac in the Torah. Midav ligin in the learning. He said, that's the way a person goes and he improves his learning and he accomplishes with his learning. If he looks at it, this is my life. Midav ligin in the Isaac. That is how a person is matzliach in his learning. Now, how does a person know if he's holding there? How does a person know if he's talking learning for real or if he's just doing going through the motions? Last year, there was a fellow, there was a bacher, a 13-year-old bacher in Lakewood, who was driving home from yeshiva by bike. And unfortunately, he was driving and the car in front of him made a short stop. He hit the car and he went flying into the car and then over the car and he landed on the other side of the car. And then the car sort of drove over his leg, and it was not such a good situation. So it came, they brought the person to the hospital. At the same time, the parents were called, they came to the hospital. And when they came, there was a pretty bad situation, and they put the buckle, they had to put him into an induced coma, so his body can have a chance to recuperate a little. The parents were there, they didn't know what's going to be. They spoke to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Listen, we already operated, we did what we can do. We don't know, he had a concussion, we don't know how bad it is, we don't know what's going to happen when we take him out of the coma." So what do you mean, what could be? Maybe he won't come out of the coma. If he does come out of the coma, maybe he won't even know how to talk. Maybe he'll forget everything. The truth is sometimes when they come out, they just start to speak gibberish. They use say curse words. So why would they say curse words? So whatever's inside of them, that's what they say. Just... These parents were sitting there crying, saying till, and the whole family's crying. And Taka, after a few days, they said, "Okay, we're going to take him off the medicine and we'll see when he comes out of the coma." Sure enough, they're sitting there and he starts to come out. And they're very excited. He opens up his eyes, he looks, he sees his father, he sees his mother, he looks. He turns to his father and he says, "Ta," he said, "what time is it?" That's the first thing he says. He tells him it's 2:00. 2:00 in the afternoon. He looks at his father, he says, "I don't think I counted sphere last night." The father started to cry. It was only later on he was able to verbalize why he cried. He said he realized now what was inside his son. If that's the first thing he can say when he comes out of a coma. I was once dealing with a bacher who unfortunately had a fight with a bus driver, and he said some not choice words. Some nibble paddlebacher. So I was speaking to the bacher, and he said, "I'm sorry, it slipped out." I said, "I have no problem that it slipped out. The question is, why was it inside in the first place?" That's the problem. He said, "This bacher slips out. What slips out? I didn't count sphere. I don't think I counted sphere." That's how a person knows what he's really doing. When he goes and he's faced with these types of things, what comes out naturally, that's how a person knows where he's holding. What does it mean, the value of our learning? Sometimes we don't appreciate we get to learn. We don't realize not everyone gets to learn. Some people get to support Torah, but they don't get to actually learn it. Many years ago, in the Mir Yeshiva, there were two Bachram. They just came from America. There weren't that many American Bachram. And they came inside the Yeshiva. And they noticed, in those days, the Arabs, they would deliver the milk. The milk were delivered in glass bottles. These cases in glass bottles. And after breakfast is over, some people went to learn right away, and some people had a little of a longer breakfast. And they noticed that the cook, not a young lady, an elderly lady, she'd come around collecting all the bottles, put them in the crates, and then schlepped the crates to the door. So the next morning when the Arabs came to deliver, they would bring the new milk and take the old ones away. So these two bakhrim said, you know, it's ridiculous. Now she has to work so hard. We're young guys. After breakfast is over, they benched, they got up, they quickly collected all the empty bottles, put them in the crates, schlepped the crates to the door, and they left it there. It took them all of 5 minutes, very happy with their good deed. And they went to learn. The next day, same thing happened, the bottles were out, they finished breakfast, they collected all the bottles, put them by the door, and went up to learn. Third day, they're finishing breakfast, and all of a sudden the cook comes out of the kitchen. And she comes over to those two bakhrim. She said, tell me, are you the two boys who've been collecting the bottles? He says, yes. Are you the two boys who've been schlepping the heavy, heavy crates to the door so I don't have to do it? And now the big smile is, yes, that's what we're doing. She says, it's very, very nice of you because they're very, very heavy. It's very difficult to do. He said, it's our pleasure. She said, but please don't do it anymore. What's the problem? She says, it's a very big chesed that you're doing. Aber zum Blatt Gemara kommt es nicht. It's not learning a Blatt Gemara. You let me do my job. You go upstairs and you do yours. Who was this lady? Who was this cook? This was Rebbetzin Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is Rebbetzin, who worked in the kitchen. She understood the value of Torah. And she wanted to do everything she can do to help people learn Torah. So we can go out and go learn, have to realize that we have the ability to actually go, not just support Torah, but to learn Torah. We are in a very fortunate situation. But sometimes a person doesn't realize it right away. Sometimes a person is lucky enough to learn Torah when he's younger, and sometimes a person isn't. There's a fellow, he was in yeshiva, got married, he was in kollel for a few years, and then he had to go to work. So he went to work, and of course, he kept the shiur in the morning, had a chrusa at night. He's very involved in his learning. Until one time, he slowly stopped coming to the shiur in the morning, stopped coming to shiur at night. And he was working very hard. And this went on for about 20 years. And one day he shows up for the early morning shiur, 5:30 in the morning he shows up. So of course everyone's kibitzing with him, what's the matter, he couldn't sleep, why are you here? He says, I can't tell you, we have to learn now. I'll tell you after davening. Now everybody got interested. So after learning, after davening, they crowd around, and what's going on? He says, you all know that a few weeks ago I had to put my mother in a nursing home. No choice, she was living by us for a while, but we had no choice, we had to put her in a nursing home. But I try to visit her at least twice a week. Yesterday, as I do all the time, I went to visit her. But there was some construction. Now this nursing home, they have separate floors for men and ladies. So they had one floor for men, one floor for ladies. But there was construction going on, so I couldn't go the normal way. So I had to go through the men's floor first to get upstairs. I'm walking down the hallway, and I hear yelling and yelling and yelling. I'm getting close to the room. I hear my mom's like a fight going on. So I got scared. I go run to the room very fast. And I see there's three old men in their 80s sitting by a window, and they're screaming at each other. 93, 87, 103, and they're yelling at each other. So I felt bad. I went over to them. I said, you know, young man, maybe I can help out a little. They look at him. Ah, you young whippersnapper, what do you know? Another guy says, you know what? We're sitting here arguing anyways. Maybe you can help us. Okay, what can I do for you? He says, well, we're sitting here, as we do every day, and we count how many cars drive by in the 2 hours. So we're counting the cars. And 93 cars pass by. This guy says 87. And the guy starts yelling, what do you mean it's 103? And he starts screaming again, how many cars pass by in the past 2 hours? 83, 100. The guy hears this, Mr. Goyim, and he walks out. He goes to visit his mother. He finishes the visit, and he has to go down the same way. And now again, I hear yelling. I said, this is not a nursing home. It's an insane asylum. Yelling. This time I hear yelling again. I walk by the room, and there's two elderly men sitting on their bed. They have a Gemara open, and they're screaming about a Pshat and Taisus. And they're yelling at each other. You don't know how to learn, Pshat and Taisus, this way, that way. They're speaking and learning. I was standing there mesmerized. And then the nurse came in with their meal, and they just said, just put it down, we're busy now. And they continued their learning. I stumbled out of the building into my car. I couldn't get the key into the ignition. And I burst out crying. And I realized, the way I'm going, I'll probably also end up in a nursing home. But I realize that I'm not learning. I'm probably going to end up in that room where they're counting the cars. But I don't want to end up in the room where they're counting the cars. I want to end up in the room where they're fighting over a Tisus. And I realize the only way I can do that is if I make sure I learn. So I'm back here. I'm back by the shir. So I can make sure when I'm older, when I'm in that nursing home, I'm not going to go count cars. I'm going to make sure I can go and learn. Reminds me of these two guys used to go to work every morning. And these two Arabs are working, and they worked on roofs. They were roofers. And they're sitting there talking to each other. And they're working. And it came lunchtime. Right? They each sit and take down a sandwich. This guy opens up his sandwich, and he looks, he goes, tuna fish. Again tuna fish? Again tuna fish? He got so angry, and he runs off the roof, and he kills himself. The other guy says, okay. Opens up his sandwich, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Peanut butter and jelly, I can't believe it. Meanwhile, there's a big commotion downstairs. Somebody just killed himself. The police come. They're looking. And these two wives are standing there talking to each other about what happened. And one lady says, I don't understand. If my husband doesn't want peanut butter and jelly, why didn't he just tell me he doesn't want peanut butter and jelly? I'd make it something else. Then the other lady says, I don't understand my husband. He makes his own lunch. Which means a person can go every day and be upset about his lunch and not do anything about it. If you don't do anything about it, it won't change by itself. A person can think, I want to be big time chacham. I want to be big time chacham. So go learn. I have to do that too. If you don't do it, it won't happen. So I just want to leave you off with one very, very important critical component to make sure that you have atzlach when you're learning. The Chavina Rav, Dov Beresh Weinefeld, he was giving a shir to 16, 17-year-old Bachram. And he was giving the shir, and he says, you know, I'm going to ask you a kasha now, very difficult kasha. Think before you answer. And he asked him the kasha, and Taka was a very short kasha. 16, 17-year-olds, they're thinking about it, and all of a sudden, after a few minutes, one guy raises his hand. The Rebbe says, yeah. And he gives a teretz. The Rebbe looks at him and says, that's not your teretz. Bachram looks, he says, I never heard the kasha before. I just thought of it. That's not your teretz. He doesn't know what to say. What's it? And the Rebbe looks at him and says, that's your mother's teretz. It's my mother's teretz. My mother doesn't learn Gemara. I never went through any of the sugyas with my mother. That's your mother's teretz. No one knows what the Rebbe is talking about. Finally, the Rebbe says, the kasha I asked you is very, very difficult. There's no way a 16-year-old is going to answer the kasha. You know how you answer that kasha? Because your mother tins lift. When your mother lights your candles Friday night, she davens for you. It was the koyach of her tefillas that you were able to answer such a kasha. And we should never think that we can do anything without tefillah. A person can daven, but he has to make sure when he's davening, that he's talking to the Rebbeinu Shleilem. And when a person has to go learn, he has to realize that all hatzlacha comes only from tefillah. So you should all be zeichet taka to continue to vaydus hakodesh and coming out to learn Torah and being a mugging for Klal Yisrael.